I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about homelessness and the obligations, both legal and moral, a community has to those who are without homes. We're going to talk about a homeless bill of rights. My guests will be Shelley Landis, an IUPUI social worker and adjunct instructor, IUPUI student Nick Brooks, Maurice Young, who's known as the mayor of Davidson Street Bridge, and Gabby Benson, realtor foundation manager. Please join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, finding us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or locating us on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about a city homeless bill of rights. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi, and Twitter is wfyi. Joining me in the studio today are four guests. We have with us Shelley Landis, who is an IUPUI social worker and adjunct instructor, as well as a mentor match manager with Trusted Mentors. We also have with us Maurice Young, who is known as the mayor of Davidson Street Bridge, Gabby Benson, who is a realtor foundation manager, and Nick Brooks, who is an IUPUI student. Welcome all of you to the program. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Certainly. Well, I want to start, and I'll throw this one, I think, first to Shelley, and ask, when we talk about a homeless bill of rights, what are we talking about here?
Well, primarily we're talking about taking away the criminalization of homelessness and making sure that people without stable housing have the same civil and human rights as the rest of the population in our city.
When we talk about criminalizing homelessness, Maurice, what do we mean by that?
When we talk about the criminalization of homelessness, we're talking about taking a social issue and moving it under the criminal justice, the wing of the criminal justice. So instead of addressing social issues, barriers that are keeping people homeless, we have now started policing people from doing life-sustaining activities.
Such as, can you give me an example? I think I know what you're talking about, but we're talking in jargon here.
No problem. For example, sleeping outside. When we were sleeping under the bridge or outside or things of that nature, those things are now being addressed. People eating permits are required, and you basically have one for the city and things like that.
How widespread a problem is this? I mean, I'll throw that open to anyone. I mean, in terms of people who are being pulled into the criminal justice system for offenses that are a product, really, of the fact that they are homeless.
I would say that the court that they've set up on Virginia Avenue, the community court over there, it sees a tremendous amount of these type of cases. So we are routed away from the city-county building initially to deal with these issues at that particular court. And it's not a diversion situation. The charge actually goes on these individuals, and then out they go until they come back with a new charge.
So, and we don't have numbers on how many that there. Gabby, do you?
Not necessarily the pure numbers of how many people are moving into the criminal justice system because of homelessness. But the Department of Corrections does analyze what it costs for us to put somebody in jail for one night. And we know what it would cost if we could find them housing for an evening and feed them.
How much does it cost?
So one arrest would cost about $790. If we could house them and treat them, provide them access to services for one day, would cost us $15. So it's much cheaper from a community perspective for us to get our homeless families and individuals access to safe and supportive housing services rather than criminalizing them in some way. It's better on our tax from a tax perspective. We're, you know, as tax-paying citizens, those dollars are better used to help people move towards self-sufficiency than to push them through the criminal justice system.
Yes, yeah, so $790 a night, you
for
said?
One arrest.
That's a 4 or 5 star hotel, basically.
One day in jail yeah. could cost between $45 to $62 in Indiana, but we could house them and feed them for $15 a day. So we know that there are better solutions than arresting somebody.
So, Shelley, tell me a little bit then specifically about what would be in a homeless Bill of Rights.
Okay, can I piggyback off of
sure.
what Gabby
sure.
was talking about? Another piece of that is arresting somebody for doing something, you know, say as panhandling or soliciting. They are also, you're also giving them another barrier. If they're going to have a misdemeanor or some kind of charge, they're going to have fees to pay. They're going to have a criminal record, which, you know, is going to be a barrier for future employment or future housing. So we don't want to give, you know, the homeless population already has multiple barriers. We don't want to give to stabilization. We don't want to give them another barrier by adding that criminal element.
Mm-hmm. And one of the arguments that you hear from I don't want to characterize, who will say that a lot of the panhandlers and the argument for the for cracking down on panhandling is that these folks really aren't homeless, that it is almost like a business that they run. Maurice, I figured, yeah, you're about to leap out of your chair to deal with that one. So,
first of all, I want to clarify the issue. The panhandling, there is an ordinance against panhandling, which actually is to keep people from soliciting folks on the highways and the ramps and so forth. The issue that we currently had where they were applying that law to individuals who were panhandling individuals, which mm-hmm. is totally different, which we call, or we've now used the phrase, passive soliciting. So you have two separate issues, but they were being punished by the law that talked about the people who were on the highways and the ramps panhandling. So it was two totally different
things.
So
the law was being reapplied to different circumstances, basically.
Absolutely. Now, when we talk about people not being homeless, it's very interesting because when you talk about people being on the outskirts of the city, I have no knowledge of who those individuals are, and it may be somebody who is scamming the system. But we were talking about all the individuals who are downtown who panhandle to the pedestrians that go by. Those individuals I have a knowledge of because we live together in various camps and situations and shelters.
So I want to come back then, Shelley, and I should invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi, and Twitter is wfyi. Shelley, specifically, what then would be in a homeless Bill of Rights that wouldn't necessarily be in say, the U.S. Constitution's Bill of Rights.
Right, and I appreciate you asking this specific situation. Nick, just handed me something. Because as a social worker, I can get, you know, kind of stuck in the civil and human rights aspect and see it as a broad movement. So, Nick, why don't you share some of the specific wording?
When we talk about a Bill of Rights, we're acknowledging that everyone is a person and that everyone deserves the same qualities that we kind of take for granted sometimes. And just some examples that we kind of take for granted of as homeless people of the right to be in public spaces, to be able to exist in those places and not be harassed is especially a big one I think a lot of people face. But just discrimination of any sort for just simply being homeless. I think is a lot of where it will be.
How did you get interested in this, Nick? I mean, you're what year are you at IUPUI?
I'm a junior.
A junior, and what are you studying?
Social work.
Social work. So is this what you plan to make your life's work then? Or?
Yeah, and that's kind of the journey I've been on, I guess, for myself personally, is just have a heart for people and have a heart for those who are being oppressed in any place of that their worth is being just mistreated or just not even shown. And so in particular, I was got interested in this. Maurice came to one of my classes and gave a presentation about homelessness and particularly addressing the myths of homelessness. It just was some startling, just kind of eye-opening insights to what homelessness really is. It just really really hit my heart, and I know a lot of people in our class. And so we just kind of mobilized around him and just this idea of being able to secure people's rights who often don't have a voice to speak for themselves.
And that's how you evolved the idea of a homeless bill of rights?
That's something that is not an original idea for us. It's actually already exists in a few other states. But for Indiana, we don't have one yet. And so just different conversations with people all over, including Maurice, different just people that we know, of just kind of bringing about this idea. I think it's been a journey. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people.
Maurice, I think you got a cue there in that the myths about homelessness. Could you address that and talk about what some of those myths might be?
Absolutely. First, let me say we do a presentation. It's a cultural competency on presentation for homelessness awareness. And I want to thank the students over at the University of Indianapolis. I was there this morning doing a presentation there. Some of the myths about homeless that we'd love to talk about are first and foremost that a lot of people question homeless people's income. Do they have jobs? Well, 60% of the people who are homeless, they do have jobs. And these jobs look like bussers, servers, cooks, valet, and things of that nature. So people are quite surprised to hear about that. One of the biggest questions that I get a lot are people on the streets, the majority, do they have addictions and felonies? And I say there are people who do have addictions and felonies. However, in our city, the majority of people suffer from mental health issues. So the largest part, I would say 50% of the people that are homeless in Indianapolis suffer from mental health disabilities.
We are talking about homelessness and the idea of a city homeless bill of rights here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Doing fine. What's on your mind?
The reason I called is I have one question and maybe kind of one long comment or short comment. The question is, are any of you on the radio today or the panelists or interviewer, have you yourselves ever been homeless? And I mean, from what experience do you speak? And if you've never been homeless, how do you, I mean, have you spent time with people who are? Sounds like some have. And then my comment really is I'm deeply concerned that we in a community become so uncomfortable with things that we either find embarrassing or unpleasant that we try to make laws that keep people from doing things that destitution leads them to. And so, in other words, I just think it's crazy that we would pass laws to further punish people that are down and out anyway because we're uncomfortable with them approaching us for money, or we claim, which I don't agree with the mayor, we claim that their panhandling affects our big business, our conventions, and our opportunity to draw people into the community. I've never known anyone to say, well, I'm not coming to Indianapolis because your panhandling problem is just too much for me to bear. That's my question. How can we really justify passing laws against people who are really unable to really kind of defend themselves or speak in a way that those who can do?
Bruce, I think you've cued Maurice up here too. Thank you very much for the call and the question. Well, Maurice,
already?
Please.
Yes, sir. Bruce, thank you for your comment. We really appreciate that. I am homeless currently. I became homeless February 15th, 2011. I lived in a camp, the Davison Street Camp, which...
That's how you became the mayor of Davison Street.
Tin City, that is correct. And actually, the conflict came because the city came and shut the camp down August the 26th, 2013. So the movement kind of began out of that, because as a part of that process, I was arrested and charged with obstruction of traffic, which I'm currently going to court for as we currently speak. So as my role in the camp was to help and assist individuals move out of homelessness and bring services down to the camp to assist with that process as well.
And I assume Shelley, and we're getting a little tight on time, Shelley, Gabby, and Nick, all three of you also have worked with the homeless fairly frequently, right?
Yeah, I've been a social worker for over 15 years, so.
We are talking about homelessness here on No Limits. My guests are Shelley Landis, Maurice Young, Gabby Benson, and Nick Brooks. You're listening to No Limits. I am John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about a city homeless bill of rights and really the issue of homelessness itself, the challenges homeless people face. My guests are Shelley Landis, an IUPUI social worker, adjunct instructor, member of Trusted Mentors, Maurice Young, who's known as the mayor of Davidson Street Bridge, Gabby Benson, who's a Realtor Foundation Manager, and an IUPUI student by the name of Nick Brooks, who's studying to be a social worker. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by giving us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Deb, welcome to the program.
I wanted to make a comment about the role of community court.
Certainly.
You know, I agree with some of the previous callers that prosecution shouldn't be a barrier to future services. And I certainly would never defend the direction that the mayor's office has given to the police department. But I do think that we need to be remembered that community court is indeed a diversion court here in Indianapolis. It's not necessarily a conviction court. The role is to get services to folks who need them. And as long as the diversion is successful, then the case is dismissed. So we're not talking about incurring fees and fines and convictions. The goal is to get people the services that they need so that they can get on.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Shelley.
I do know that that is a purpose of community court, because Trusted Mentors, we get referrals from community court. So we work with reentry and formerly homeless and homeless individuals. But Maurice, why don't you speak a little bit more to her specific comment?
The things that we experienced as we lived in the camp, there were people who would go back and forth to community court who picked up various charges. And they were challenged being indigent as far as paying probation fees. They were challenged as far as the work that they was set before them as far as community service, because they didn't have bus tickets and things of that nature. But I don't think I've ever experienced anybody who was diverted out of the program. It's good to hear that they are diverting some people out, but the people who I'm most affiliated with in the homeless camps and in the communities, none of those individuals were diverted out to my knowledge.
Probably ought to established too, Maurice, since it, you know, one of the questions in the audience's interest is about whether anyone here has experienced homelessness. How did you become homeless? I mean, can you tell me a little bit about what brought you to that point?
I can. Actually, in my personal life, I was about to address a divorce and a custody battle, so I was kind of really focused on self and what that looked like, that was going to look like. As a result, I end up staying in a shelter to get my head clear so I could get the voices, the people who were talking around me, out of my head so I could make some clear decisions, at which time there was a treatment that was occurring towards homeless people in the shelter, and I definitely tried to just mind my business and keep moving forward, but it was so compelling that my situation, their situation was bigger than my situation, so therefore I committed myself to help change that situation.
We're talking about homelessness here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Bishop, welcome to the program. Bishop, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello. Yes, you're on No Limits. What's on your mind? Oops, we have lost Bishop. Okay. Jack, welcome to the program.
Hey there. Hi, this is Maurice. I wanted to give you a shout, buddy. This is Jack.
I'm assuming that the two of you know each other then.
From one body?
Yeah.
What's up, Jack?
Yeah, my name is Jack. I work for the Marin County Health Department, and I do what we do. Basically, we're the guys that do the mosquito control and other aspects of public health pest control. And I've been to several of the camps to deal with problems that they have with rats because of the fact that people are generous and they donate so much food. But unfortunately, the camps have really no adequate way to store them. So I met Maurice probably about 3 years ago, I think, at Davidson Street. But I've been dealing with other camps, too. And I just was going to make one little point in how I got to know the people and know that under each one of those bridges, there's a whole bunch of stories about how folks got there. But if there was some way that whether outreach groups or can coordinate, you know, donations of foodstuffs to the homeless groups, because a lot of times they're just overwhelmed. Remember the day they delivered all the strawberries?
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, an elephant couldn't eat that many strawberries, and it was just.
But the rats could, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, I just was hoping that maybe some of the panel might know of attempts to coordinate donations to the folks on the bridge. And also, Maurice, I heard that Wes was back on the street again, which I was kind of concerned about.
Right.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Jack. Well,
all right, thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye bye. Well, I wanted that's probably that whole issue of sanitation and, you know, food preservation, things like that are not things we normally think of when it comes to dealing with homelessness. Shelley, Gabby, you know,
In other states that have looked into producing a homeless bill of rights, often they have had laws that have restricted churches and ministry groups from even setting up feeding programs for the homeless. Thank goodness for these groups in our community who do come out week after week, day after day, to feed the homeless. And it's completely necessary because there are so many limited resources available to help individuals in a constructive way. We want them to do that. And I know that our Indianapolis, you know, the IMPD and the health department do work to make sure that we're keeping our neighborhoods, you know, really productive. Maurice has amazing structures to the camps and processes and rules that maintains really a community of they function as a very strong community. And I think he can speak to how they manage that, like we would in any other neighborhood.
Yeah, Shelley.
I just want to do a real quick shout out to Food for Souls because they're one of the groups that not only feeds homeless but also builds relationships with the chronically homeless. And we are talking a lot about people in camps, but as Maurice could share, there's actually five groups of homeless. And I know that I've worked somebody that we recently matched with a mentor was housed, was staying in his own tent away from any communities. And he had basically a lifeline. He had a guy from a church come out and make sure that he had what he needed until he was able to get housing with the help of Horizon House. So those groups are definitely fundamental. Mm-hmm.
And one thing I wanted to say, there was a great deal of city participation when we had our camp in that the trash company would come Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays and take out the trash. Jack was with the Marion County Health Department. He was proactive with the rats. We had a 330-gallon water tank because services provided to us shut down on the weekends, so the fire department would come over and fill that up for us. And then just different resources like that, which really helped things move along in the camp.
We've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Mary. If you want to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. It says, I am involved in the movement for the HBR, Homeless Bill of Rights. Our goal is actually to see this introduced in the 2015 Indiana General Assembly. Are Nick and Shelley, are the two of you involved in that effort to get it introduced as legislation, Maurice?
Mm-hmm.
Mostly Nick and Maurice. I have been connecting my students all along. So I do have a student, Maria Kenny, who has been involved. But yeah, Nick or Maurice, why don't you speak?
And that, for my part, too, that's a lot of us as a class and just as a student. It's a lot about getting awareness. Mm-hmm. It's having conversations with people about what do you think homelessness is? What does it look like? What are we actually facing? Kind of just really getting to the facts beyond the myths that we're starting to believe and helping other people kind of get that awareness just to bring them to what Maurice is working on with other legislators and things about actually getting a formal bill written and introduced.
Practical terms, though, have you got, is there a legislator who's indicated that he might be willing to carry this for you? Or
indeed, we have three that want to see after we get a draft up the language, which is presented, I mean, what the language says, and then we'll go from there.
Who are the three?
I don't think I probably can talk about that just yet.
Okay. Sorry. Well, we'll have to bring you back then to do that. We've also gotten an email question from a listener named Matt. It says, where I work on the northwest side of Indianapolis near 86th and Michigan, there's so many people that are at nearly every main intersection that hold signs asking for money. My question is, and I know there may be no good answer to this, but how do I tell the difference between a panhandler and someone who is truly homeless? I should note that I've seen some people dropped off at corners in cars and picked up an hour later. Thanks.
One thing, unfortunately, we will spend this time dispelling myths. If we could do our cultural competency, that would help out tremendously. So there's some things that I'm going to say that I hope that people can kind of follow along. In the homeless community, we have five groups within that community. We have people who live outside, which is myself included. We have people who live in shelters.
Mm-hmm.
We have people who live in abandoned houses. We have people who live in automobiles. And then we have the panhandlers. That's a group within itself. Most people assume that all five of us do panhandling, and we do not. That is a group by themselves. This group is unique because they have money associated with those guys. They can still go to friends and family's houses and hang out. They can get motels. They can still kind of function as if they're not homeless because of the money that's associated with those guys. But when the money dries up, back out they come. So that's a group within itself. And it's difficult to kind of tell who's who when you're outside of the city. But downtown, I think it becomes more prevalent because the panhandlers who live outside in the camps, they consider this their job and the people who panhandle regulars. So there are shifts. Mm-hmm. The first shift are people coming to work. The second shift is the lunch shift. Then that group moves out, and then another group comes in, and these guys get people going home, and then that another group will come in, and they'll do the, what we call the nightlife. And then there's your big events group. Now, when you have big events like the Super Bowl, Gen Con, there's no telling who's who down there at that point in time. But that would be, that would be one indicator.
Yeah, and to Maurice's point, panhandling and homelessness are not one and the same.
Yeah.
And the great opportunity that Indianapolis...
But it sounds like panhandling is, I'm sorry to interrupt, is a subgroup of,
right.
of homelessness.
Yes. But not every person who's homeless does that. And the opportunity to bring a homeless bill of rights to the forefront of our minds and our community just gets us talking about who is homeless, what is that face of somebody who's homeless, and what can we do as a community. It's a huge opportunity for Indianapolis just to have a conversation.
Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I was been listening to the conversation, and I guess this is a question for everybody there. Yeah, I've often heard that a significant percentage of homeless folks do have mental issues, and I'm not sure what that percentage is. Maybe one of your guests know. But I wonder how significant the outreach program is for mental health and whether we could do more in that area. And have an outreach where people would literally go out to the streets, talk to people, and try to help those that do need those mental health services. That's my question. I'll listen offline.
Thanks very much for the call, Bill.
Thank you. Okay.
We were fortunate at our camp to have Midtown Mental Health actually come out and provide services once a week. Rebecca Bricker and Linda Lynn will come out every Wednesday at 9 o'clock and build relationships and help with that process. They were more of a intensive case management type situation. Adult and child, if they had clients who may have started housed and end up homeless, they would also come out to the camps to visit their clients. And currently, we are working with Cummings Behavioral, who's very adamant about starting in the streets to bring the people in. So there's definitely help on the horizon.
Mm-hmm. Figure I heard was 80% of those currently homeless have some sort of mental illness.
We are talking about homelessness here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Rebecca, welcome to the program. Looks like we just lost Rebecca as well. Well, we've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Michael who says, I've been a volunteer at some free clinics for over 13 years, and along with many other volunteers and professional staff, provide basic health care for homeless people and poor working folks. I can honestly say that those who are homeless do not, and he capitalizes not, fit the stereotype some have of people with drug, alcohol, criminal backgrounds. Unfortunately, most are just poor working folks who have had less access to education, jobs that provide a living wage, health care, etc., and of course, a good number of veterans or have mental illnesses that have been criminalized instead of treated in appropriate settings. It's sad to see that in such a wealthy city, state, country, we still see an unwillingness to provide adequate resources to help our fellow citizens. Well, I mean, that sets us up really for the big picture question. I mean, we'll start with Indianapolis. How well does Indianapolis do at dealing with this larger problem, not just the symptom of homelessness, but the causes behind it? Shelley, I'll throw that one to you first.
I was going to say, I feel like a lot of things are in motion, like Maurice and Gabby both mentioned. And even, I feel like, put all hands on deck, get students involved in the Bill of Rights. There's the CHIP is doing a lot in the Community 100,000 Homes Initiative. All your agencies, Horizon House, faith-based, there's a lot going on in this city, I feel like, and moving in the right direction. Some of it is, working together. Personally, I feel like we can, as a city, do a better job of listening to people like Maurice, who actually are in the trenches. That would be, that's part of what a Bill of Rights is about. Also, is giving the homeless a larger and a louder voice.
What would we, with a homeless Bill of Rights, since obviously we're going to try to get that adopted as a legislative, what would we have government do that it's not doing right now, Maurice?
Currently on the books, we have three states who have cleared it, Connecticut being one. Rhode Island was the first, Connecticut and Illinois. Connecticut cleared it because there was language in their supportive housing that was hindering homeless people from getting in. So the thrust of that bill for that that state was to get that language cleared up to get the people in. In Connecticut, there was police harassment. So the thrust there was to minimize that intimidation, address that issue, and move that state forward. I haven't really seen much about why Illinois adopted it, but maybe it was just cutting edge and they're excited about it. But in Indiana, our issue is the laws that are on the book, they overexpanded to include us into these things, and we don't want that anymore. Because if I'm sleeping in a tent under a bridge and I'm charged with obstruction of traffic, which is a Class B misdemeanor, that's a problem.
We are talking about homelessness and a homeless Bill of Rights here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Shelley Landis, Maurice Young, also known as the mayor of Davidson Street Bridge, Gabby Benson, and Nick Brooks. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about a homeless bill of rights and the issue, the challenges of homelessness in general. My guests are Shelley Landis, who is an IUPUI social worker and adjunct instructor and also works with Trusted Mentors, Maurice Young, who is known as the mayor of Davidson Street Bridge, Gabby Benson, Realtor Foundation manager, and an IUPUI student, social worker, aspiring social worker by the name of Nick Brooks. If you would like to join the conversation, please do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. Vincent, welcome to the program.
Hey, hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Hey, just listen to the show, and first of all, I want to say thanks for taking my call. But second, I know panhandling homelessness is not one and the same. However, there are some concerns, just like the last email caller or so forth, when they talk about shifts. And it is almost at shifts where I've seen the same thing. People get dropped off, people getting transportation, people, you know, and there's been stories such as Channel 6 just did a story on how these people, you know, they sometimes live in a nicer house than I live in. But listening to Maurice, it seems like there's a lot of excuses given for this type of behavior. And that is a concern for me because just like me, anybody else, you know, you raise, taught, you know, get a job, you know, raise your family, take care of your family and do what you have to do. And unfortunately, we all fall on bad times. And I understand that and also understand that mental illness plays a major part in it. But at what point do you stop giving people excuses and start realizing that some of these people are taking advantage of those that do have a caring heart, whether it's at 86 Michigan or those people downtown that they go in, day out, asking people for money? Now, that's my first question slash statement. And my second issue is this. As far as the homelessness under the, you know, the homeless camps and so forth, am I not mistaken that there are organizations that go down there and they try to get people the assistance that they need, and many people refuse that service? And so who's to blame of that if you refuse help and then, you know, you say that your rights are being violated? And I'm not proposing that nobody's rights be violated. Be violated by no means, but if you refuse help, then unfortunately that does fall upon you.
Thanks very much for the call and the questions, Vincent. Well, I'll start. Maurice, I'll let you have the first crack.
First of all, like I said, I didn't see the expose about them following somebody home, but again, the panhandling dynamic is very unique. But we want to use the term passive soliciting because that's legal, because that's a First Amendment right that individuals have. It's a form of soliciting funds, just like any nonprofit does. So I believe that person has the right to do that and move freely about the city to do that. As far as refusing services, unfortunately, I wish this gentleman could come to one of our cultural competency presentations. It would help out tremendously.
How would somebody do that?
Come to the our Facebook page is Indiana Homeless Bill of Rights. If you just Facebook the individuals on there, we'll set that up and we'll come right out there and do a presentation for you. Like I said, we did one this morning at U of I, and we'll be back Thursday to do one there again.
We are talking about homelessness and the idea of a homeless bill of rights here on No Limits. Dwayne, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have a couple questions. One is, I know there's a lot of different agencies that are trying to assist and help and provide shelter and food and things for the homeless. And I'd like to get some feedback on that as far as, do they overlap each other? Sometimes there's a limited amount of funds that are available, and is there a competition for that, those funds to help? And a second question is, could you give us any information about people that have been actually let out of homelessness and have been restored back into what we would call a more normal social position? And then, are they able to maintain that, or do they fall back into it? I mean, are there any examples of people that have been able to get out of homelessness and stay out?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Shelley.
I'll take the second one. One of our mentees was a middle-class professional, and talking about being a myth buster. He had, you know, a middle-class life and was very successful in his career, wife, kids, the whole deal, and ended up losing his job, which is one of the main causes of homelessness, is job loss. He ended up with a serious illness, congestive heart failure. Lived in his car for a while, came to Indianapolis to help with family, a father passed away, ended up at Gennesaret, where he stayed until he was able to get well, was connected with a mentor to rebuild some relationships in the community, and actually was hired by Gennesaret, is one of their employees there, and is taking classes to start his own business. So, and actually he's going to be a mentor with Trusted Mentors soon and mentor somebody else. So, yeah, I feel like we definitely see successes all the time. I know I didn't answer the first question.
That's okay. And Gabby, I think you want to jump in.
Absolutely. Over the past 10 years, the Realtor Foundation has invested over $1 million in this cause. And we specifically look for organizations who can show us impact and progress and moving people towards self-sufficiency. There is a lot of overlap in services, but from getting a return on your investment as a donor, that's something you really want to look at. There's great organizations like Trusted Mentors or even a school on wheels that partners with shelters and temporary housing programs so that they can bring in somebody with expertise in education and mentoring and mental health and addiction so that their clients can really get the full spectrum of services available in Indianapolis.
Yes, Maurice.
And John, I just want to say we were successful at transitioning 61 people out of our camp who we got back into society because we addressed the barrier that was keeping them homeless.
Mm-hmm. 61 out of how many?
At the time they shut the camp down, we had 67.
So 61 out of 67?
Not 61. We had over a period of 2.5 years, we probably had about 400 people that lived there.
Okay, so 61 out of about 400.
That is correct.
Yes, Nick.
And what I think, Maurice, when you talk about just how successful the camp was in transitioning people out, because you started with relationships. We've got to remember we're talking about individuals here. And just like us, you have to have trust before you can move forward in anything. So the fact that you could be in life together with these individuals, learning about their stories, learning about those barriers is how you could first get to know them so then you could address those barriers.
We've gotten a question from Facebook, and if you want to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits, WFYI. It says, thank you for this topic. If you all have any thoughts or stories about the outreach programs, churches in particular, that help the people in these situations. Indiana, Indianapolis especially, is very church-driven. We have many mega churches and small churches, and the message is always help those in need and feed them and give them every chance you can. And then our lawmakers pass bills that do the opposite and hurt them when they are already struggling. The Homeless Bill of Rights is a great idea that could help people, but with how our last session played out, does it seem destined for opposition? Maurice.
One of the strategies that we put together in the class, this is very interesting. We thought it would be wise to speak to the people that live in the other counties first. I understand that there's a high burnout rate in Marion County because homelessness is here and is visible. But we started in Hamilton County, Hendricks County, Boone, and Johnson, and we are getting wonderful responses from the communities out there, the churches and organizations out there. So I'm excited, and I think it'll definitely do what it needs to do.
We are talking about homelessness. We've got a lot of phone calls here, so I'm going to ask both callers and our panel here to try to be succinct so we can get as many people as possible. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Certainly.
I was wondering about where there could be some kind of forum for recommendations for solutions. For example, if public funds could be allocated to maybe provide the temporary housing necessary and the mental health stabilization, but to have something maybe of a public farm or some kind of way for to give homeless people work that the public could then purchase these goods, making it a cyclical system between public funds and government using public funds for this, and then the public then say buying these vegetables off these farms and then other things, you know, could stem from that. So where could someone go to, you know, give these kind of recommendations and petition maybe the state, petition the government to get that kind of money and funding?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Mark. I'll throw that one, Maurice.
I think, Mark, first we need a foundation. Homeless people in our city, we don't have anywhere to belong. And that's the foundation to everything. When you guys get sick or you need to be somewhere, you go to your home. We don't have anywhere to home. Therefore, we infiltrate the libraries in the city, the malls, who are extremely frustrated. So before we talk about job and work opportunities, we need to find a place where we can exist first and then build up from there. Because I believe once we have a central location, there's so many people that want to help, but they just don't know how to help. So once we can identify where that place is, we can then move forward with something positive such
as
that.
Part of what I heard Mark saying, too, was creating some idea of a public farm or a public residence, too, almost a New Deal-style approach to dealing with homelessness. Shelley, I mean, is that a practical approach, or is it?
Actually, that's interesting. We mentor different groups, young adults aging out of foster care, reentry, and home. So all these are at risk of homeless. And we actually, our intern, Maria Kinney, who's also friends with Maurice, is leading a group discussion around business development, because people have skills and expertise and abilities. People who are homeless actually, you know, I hear all the time, they help each other. They want to give back. They want to contribute to the community. So, yeah, I think a lot of this out-of-the-box thinking, you know, such as a farm where homeless people work is on target.
Corey, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been listening for just about 15 minutes to your program, and there was a comment made that I wanted to speak to about panhandlers and the legitimacy of panhandlers and perception that a lot of people are panhandling and then going back home to comfortable homes. Suggesting that it's a deceit. Well, I'm a disabled veteran, and I'm in a very precarious position because I can't work. And there is a safety net in place to prevent me from becoming homeless, but it takes a lot of effort and a lot of work by the people that are supporting me and by me myself to ensure that I don't fall through the cracks. And I'm in a very, very vulnerable spot. And to someone like me, it's a very tempting thing to go out and panhandle because it's a way to receive funds and keep my home when the safety net has not been thrown for me yet. I don't panhandle. I haven't yet found myself in quite that vulnerable position, but I could see myself being in that place. There are many, many organizations in the city that can and do help, but they don't help until you've fallen through the cracks completely. I haven't fallen through the cracks completely. So I'm stuck.
Good luck to you, Corey, and thank you very much for the call and for sharing your story.
Thank you.
And I guess that's another category. I mean, we have talked about the people who fall all the way. There's another group there that lives right on the precipice. You know, how... And I'm not even sure how we would classify them. I mean, those are, go ahead, Maurice.
We call them the working poor.
The working poor?
That's what we refer to them as.
Do they need a Bill of Rights as well? Or is the homeless Bill of Rights deal with them?
They do not, because they have property, or they live in a, usually it'll be low-income housing. There's rights attached to that. So they will be okay. That group is generally not discriminated against the way that we are. If I could, I can give you some examples of what I'm talking about. I hate to say it like that, but when I go, if I go to the mall and I have my backpacks and things with me, I have 15 minutes to buy something, or security's asking me to leave. If I go downtown and we're having an event, certain restaurants will offer me a small discount to take my food to go. So you have these little situations like that that just keep just growing and growing and growing. More importantly, the parks downtown in front of Central Library, where the majority of the people hang out, there's a permit that's issued for one organization to feed for the whole city. And that is not feasible for as many people as we have that need to eat. So the people who come downtown, the church groups and organizations, they're doing it illegally because they don't have the permit. But why would we only have one permit to offer, which is kind of outrageous? So this bill would address those issues and move us forward. So we're not asking for special rights. We're asking for equal rights.
Mm-hmm. Nick.
And I would say as well as we look at this is going to be a growing problem because we see that those who are falling into poverty are growing as well. The Polis Center right here in Indianapolis, they've done a study and actually found that now as of 2012, there's one in five people who are homeless or, pardon me, impoverished in Indianapolis. That's looking around over 194,000 people who are living at $2,300. $23,000 or less. So we obviously see that as we have a growing number who are becoming impoverished, it's going to be more necessary to protect the rights of those who will end up homeless.
We're getting tight on time. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call. Leslie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Certainly.
I actually work with Shelley and Maurice. I'm over at the Homeless Initiative Program, and I have been really excited about just this being covered. And I was thinking about folks who are maybe listening to this and hearing about these issues for the first time and assuming that a number of folks would be looking for ways to get involved. And I just wanted to offer the encouragement that folks seek out involvement through professional groups, or I know Food for Souls has been represented, and just to encourage folks to get involved in avenues that are already existing. I feel like the fulfillment there would maybe be much greater than trying to initiate something on their own. So just wanted to offer that, and thanks to you all for being on the air today.
Thank you very much for the call, Leslie.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you.
On that note, since we are getting right up against the window here, could you give me, in about 10 seconds, I'm going to give each of you a shot, one way that, a concerned person could try to help with a homelessness situation in the city. I'll start with Maurice.
Wow. That's a challenging question for me because as a homeless person, I have a different take on the services that are currently being provided. Mm-hmm. They don't have the capacity to do it without the help of the city and the state. They don't have that, nor will they advocate for it for whatever reason. So I would say if you start with the Homeless Bill of Rights and then move towards a cultural competency, then we will see what talents you have and can bring to the table, and we will move forward that way.
Well, maybe we'll keep the focus on that. If people want to get, since you came here to talk about the Homeless Bill of Rights, how, if people did want to show support for the Homeless Bill of Rights or learn more about it, how do they do that?
Facebook. Join the conversation on Facebook. It's Indiana Bill of Rights, mm-hmm. and students are updating the page. There are several ways to get involved. Hopefully we're going to have more film screenings of The Advocate, which shares more about Maurice's story and his goals in working with the community.
And that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Shelley Landis, Maurice Young, Gabby Benson, and Nick Brooks. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.